Now, we can say it's the NFL offseason, but we know it's never really an NFL offseason because the NFL makes itself a year-round thing, and it's true, right? Like, the NFL's done a great job of just making every month have something on the calendar, and the NBA's trying to do that. It's kind of getting there, but you just won't top the NFL. I mean, it's just between, you know, watching fat guys run in tights to, you know, OTAs to just random trades that happen after June 1st. I mean, this is what the NFL is. Michael Jenkins jumps on with me now, Get Loud Podcast, with Fred Smoot, Game Day Garage as well. And look, I know you recently got married. I have been able to say it in person to you. It's as close as I'll get, but congratulations again, my friend.
Thank you.
You know, it's been an eventful summer for you, for sure. Look, the Commanders now, man, it's like a lot of this becomes mostly speculation with a little bit of, hey, this is what somebody said at OTAs, or this is what somebody said this offseason. Look, there's a lot of questions that are certainly surrounding this team. But what I will say, just big picture before we kind of get into some of the other stuff that's happened recently. Like, I don't know, man, Jenks, I look at this team, and given what we saw last year, I do feel like for what they were able to do this offseason, they checked a majority of the boxes, right? Like, they addressed the defense in a lot of ways. They got new coordinators, which we knew was you know, part of the problem. I do feel like there is a high level of optimism, at least at this point where they are. You got to prove it on the field. You've got to actually show that they can stay healthy. Yeah. But it definitely feels like there's a lot more. Like, the questions are, how much did they improve versus, like, oh my God, what are they going to do besides, well, you know, center is obviously still, we don't know what the hell they're going to do there. But I do feel like, I feel overall like this is a team that at least had a solid to strong offseason given all of the things that they needed to address.
Yeah, I totally agree, and it's really difficult to go from where they were last year and then replicate where they were 2 years before, right? So I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. So if that's the case, then what you want is just sort of meaningful improvement from last year when you won five games, and I think they did that. It's just, it's so difficult in the NFL to just flip the script in one season, and particularly when you look at the roster that this franchise or ownership inherited, and they caught lightning in a bottle that initial season with Jaden, but so many things went perfectly right for everything to happen. That's just not the way the NFL generally works. So now we're sort of getting that baseline again, like, all right, they are getting better. They have made meaningful improvements via the draft, via free agency. So I think we're going to see a much better team. Like, how much better? I'm not quite sure, but I don't think there's any question they made the right moves, and we're going to see a better squad all around. There's no question about that, and I do think the coordinators are going to help in a big way.
And that's, you know, listen, there's certainly a level of risk, right? When you have two rookie coordinators, it doesn't mean that it can't work out, but there is also still the question of what are you going to get from both Durante Jones and David Blau on the defensive side and the offensive side of the football. And that's the stuff, really, man, we're just not going to have it answered until we start getting into the season. And hell, even this, and I will tell this, to temper expectations in either way, because let's remember, Jim Zorn started off 6-2 when he was the Redskins head coach years ago. So just because you have a good start or a bad start doesn't mean that it's going to continue, because things didn't start off well with Marty Schottenheimer, who should have still been the head coach after 1 year.
I miss Horny for Zorny. What a time that was.
Do you really, though? Do we really miss that? Oh, gee, gosh. Jenks, I'll tell you what. It's a good time.
Oh, he's, I mean, and then they ran, what was that one play that they ran? It was the most bizarro swinging gate. I don't know what it was.
We don't speak of swinging gate anymore. Yeah. We pretend that never happened. I have actually had it, the men in black have removed it from my brain. So,
oh, as they should have. I mean, that was sort of the perfect encapsulation. But you're right. And also, you have to remember that, you know, whenever you bring in a new coordinator, I mean, these guys have to learn it all over again. And for every Jaden, because we keep hearing, Jaden has already picked up the offense. He already knows it like the back of his hand, which I absolutely believe, by the way. That's sort of in his DNA. He's always been that way. Everyone has to learn a new system. And, of course, the quarterback is at the top of that apex. He's paramount there. But everyone learning a new offense, everyone learning a new defense is a real thing, and it takes time, right? So you have to throw everything out the window. It's a little bit better on offense because you have a guy, David Blau, who is already on staff, right? So I think there's going to be a lot of the same vernacular used. There are going to be some changes, clearly, but that's an easier transition. But particularly on defense, you're talking about a whole new scheme, a more aggressive scheme. Guys are going to be moved around. You can tell by the way that they've signed free agents or who they've signed that that's kind of part of the plan. And so we might not know early on, based on the early returns, like you were saying, exactly how things are going to shake out, because guys are going to have to pick up on both sides of the ball and figure it out where they're reacting instead of thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's crazy to think this offense is going to look different, Jenks, in a lot of ways, because obviously with Jaden under center, as you mentioned, that's one thing. And the fact that, I mean, they're going to kind of ditch that no huddle a lot. I mean, we're going to see it a little bit, but we're not going to have that no huddle offense and a lot of shotgun and pistol like we did with Jaden as much too. So that's really what interests me, is because I'm with you. Like, I totally believe that he's grasped what they've installed so far with the offense, and we know this stuff gets layered in over time and you start adding more, but there's going to be a level of adjustment, I think, that's there, because he's used to playing in shotgun a lot more and in pistol.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, you want to put players not just in a position to succeed, Nick, but you want to give them options to show what they can do, right? I mean, the media business is kind of like this. A lot of businesses are like that, where it's like, okay, I can do the tasks you're giving me, but I can actually do more. I just need the opportunity to do it. Like Terry McLaurin was talking about that. Like, all of those guys really like Cliff Kingsbury, but they felt sort of limited, because if you're in the gun, or if you look at Terry's route tree, like, it was kind of limited too. And now he's going to have different options, which sort of allows him to do what he does best in the open field. He was saying, look, when I get to the stem of my route, I can do a lot of different things I couldn't do before. If you're Jaden, all of a sudden you get play action, which opens up all sorts of possibilities. So it's not that the offense wasn't effective. We saw that 2 years ago, but now maybe you take your players, your key pieces, and you give them extra room to really show what they can do and maximize the amount of talent that they have. And I feel like that's sort of a common theme we're hearing from these guys.
You know, I saw Sam Cosmi talking about how much he likes the offense. Terry McLaurin has talked about it too. Even before OTAs, he was, you know, raving about what David Blough's bringing in, all this. And we know that Dan Campbell absolutely loves David Blough, Jenks. So, you know, he's going to be really great, man. Look, I'm not going to sit here and look at this offense and say, like, they've got all the pieces that they need for this to succeed. But it certainly is improved in a lot of ways. I still look at this, and I know it's not a glamorous position until the spotlight's on it. What the hell are they going to do at center? Like, what are you hearing? Is it Nick Allegretti? It's just, to me, I'm actually surprised. I know it's center, so people don't get as excited about it, but that's literally the connection between the offensive line and the quarterback, and it just feels like they were way too casual with this position this offseason.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that stands out to most people, because, you know, I think there was maybe a slight miscalculation in the market for Biotis and maybe what he could offer. And so now you're just saying, oh, we'll slide Allegretti, which is fine. Like, it's a fine solution, but it's not an ideal solution when you look back and say, well, you had other options and you chose not to go that route, right? And so I think that's a big question mark. Of all the moves that were made during the offseason, it's the one thing that stands out to me where, you know, you could have upgraded, or at least, I don't know if they downgraded, but they didn't help themselves. Do you know what I mean? Like, you had different options, and it seems like you just didn't take advantage of maybe the opportunities that were in front of you. And so maybe it works out, but I feel like maybe that's the one thing that probably could have been handled a little bit better.
You think they're going to get another receiver? Maybe, you know, a specific one that just happened to get himself in a little bit of trouble, perhaps?
I think that's definitely a possibility. Yeah. And I'll also say, I mean, it's definitely a possibility. And here's the thing. Sign a guy on a one-year deal. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Bring in Diggs. Bring in someone on a one-year deal. It doesn't have to be long-term, right? You add immediate production on the field. Maybe not top-tier production, but that's someone that can open up carry. And I'll also say this, Nick. I know he's not a receiver, but Ogunquo is a real beast after the
game.
I mean, this guy can absolutely play. And, you know, if you're talking about options, he's the one guy, because we're excited about, you know, Owe on defense, and we're excited about the draft picks, and all of that is really exciting. Sonny's going to be amazing. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But Chig is the one dude, like, where I know he wasn't a household name. If you look at his tape and what he did in Tennessee, like, this dude is a baller. And I feel like when you talk about the offense, we'll talk about maybe bringing in a different receiver to help out Terry. That's all well and fine, but Chig is just sitting there, and I think he's the guy that's going to surprise a lot of people this season.
I'm glad you said that, Jenks, because I think he is going to have a monster year this year in this offense.
Yeah.
I really do, because we know that Jaden likes to throw to tight ends. Zach Ertz was certainly there's a comfort level that was there. But, you know, most young quarterbacks want to have that safety net. It's either a tight end or, you know, I go back to RG3 years ago in his rookie year. It was Santana Moss. You know, third and three, he's going to Santana. We saw that a lot, but – I think Chigakonkwo is going to be great in this offense. He brings a level. I mean, listen, he brings the size that's there, but that athleticism of just and the ability, just if you can just get the ball in his hands and let him run with it, like, he can make those plays. And I know he's not as, like, this is the one thing that I've heard from people. Well, Zach Ertz is 6'5", and Chigakonkwo is 6'3", so he's not as big of a red zone target. Dude, he's a big red zone target. They're going to have an opportunity to throw him the football. I think Chigakonkwo is going to have a great year in this offense.
Oh, I think he's going to be unbelievable. I mean, just do yourself a favor, and I've done this too, like, total nerd. Like, I'm going to watch some Chig highlights here, and you're like, oh. Like,
the old YouTube rabbit hole, huh?
Yeah, and also, too, you know, you see this a lot of times with guys who play on losing teams. Like, they just get lost in the mix. Like, they're having good seasons or they have a ton of talent. But look, if you're playing for, you know, the Raiders or you're playing for the Titans and teams that are just struggling and at the bottom of the barrel, like, they don't get a lot of attention, and standout players just kind of fly under the radar, because who's really outside of Nashville being like, oh, how did the Titans do? What are, you know, what's going on with their offense? Houston? Nobody. I mean, NFL personnel are doing that. So it's easy for guys like that. It reminds me of, obviously on a different side of the football, but it's like when Frankie Louvu came in a few years ago, and that first season when he came over from Carolina and he was just all over the place and hyper-aggressive, and everyone said, who is this guy? I was like, yeah, he'd been toiling with the Panthers, but he's really good. So from an under-the-radar perspective, it kind of reminds me of that, where I think he's a guy who we're going to be talking about a few weeks in, like, oh, wow, what a great signing.
Well, remember, too, I mean, at his press conference, he basically called out the Titans and was like, I'm going to have a real route tree now.
Right. You know, I mean, look, bad organizations, you know, it starts from the top down. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yes, I do. Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's I know it's easy to point to coaching, and of course that's a massive part of it, but it starts at the top and it trickles all the way down. We saw that here for years, and man, it trickles down into play calling and guys who are not being maximized or guys who are underutilized, whatever it is. And so when you have an organization like the Titans struggling for a reason, like, it doesn't shock me. He's like, thank God I'm out of there, because, you know, just like the Jets, there are certain organizations where you go and good players go to die.
Before you go, how was the honeymoon? I saw a lot of posts of you sitting in beach chairs.
that was all. My only concern was I hope they don't run out of rum, because I'm not kidding, Nick. I averaged, like, when I go, I don't drink a pina colada. Like, I don't go into a bar here in D.C. like, get a pina colada. But when I'm on vacation, I mean, it's probably 3 to 4 a day. But then I'm like, okay, I got to cut back on the sugar content. I probably had, I would say, at least 3 a day. We were there for 10 days. So if the over-under was set at 30, I probably had around like 35 pina coladas. And it was remarkable. It was perfect. We had a great time. And, of course, didn't want to leave. But the marriage was great. The ceremony was great. And the honeymoon was great as well. And you were in Hawaii.
I was. I was just talking about this before. It's the jet lag hangs for a while. It lingers for a few days. I am not there yet, my friend. It is not East Coast time in my head.
Yeah, that looked awesome as well. I got to get back out there. But yeah, it was awesome, man. And we did a little bit of everything, but mostly just like you were saying, just sitting on the beach, just taking it in.
And that's what we all need, because football season, I know we got a couple of months here, but we know it all shows up faster than everybody expects. And then we're hoping for obviously a lot more than 5 wins for the Commanders this coming season. Michael Jenkins, Get Loud Podcast, and of course Game Day Garage as well. Great to talk to you, buddy.
Great to talk to you too, bud.
I tell you what, that is a lot of pina coladas in one day. I, you know, here's the thing about pina coladas. Not for me. I'm less of the frozen drink guy. But, Jenks, listen, you got to have sometimes your vacation drink, maybe. If you drink, if you don't drink at all, then maybe you get a mocktail. That's fine, too. But I'll tell you, that's definitely a lot of pina coladas. That's for sure. Thanks to Jenks. Good stuff, man. I'm Nick Ashew. You know, there's a lot of potential for upside for this Commanders defense this year. I mean, you got a lot of new starters, Adafe Owe, Leo Chenal, Sonny Styles, Nick Cross. I mean, maybe somebody like a Jordan McGee takes the next step, and Frankie Louvu of 2 years ago. Like, I know it was just abysmal last year, but there is the potential for this defense to look vastly different. And look, if the Commanders can stay relatively healthy by football standards, mainly Jaden Daniels, And this defense is even just middle of the pack in, you know, total defense, right? They're respectable against the pass and the run. They don't need to be great, but respectable. I mean, yeah, this is a team that should be back in the playoffs in a very wide open NFC. And I'm not putting them above the Eagles. I'm not putting them above the 49ers. I'm not putting them above a lot of teams in the NFC. But they should be a in the hunt team come week 15, week 16, week 17. I mean, they did a lot this offseason. It doesn't mean that every free agent signing is going to hit. But it does mean that there's at least the upside with some of the guys that they add. Like, Leo Chenal is 25 years old and has, what, 44 career starts, a Super Bowl with the Chiefs. This could be one of those situations where it's a Dorrance Armstrong, where Dan Quinn knew what he was getting in Dorrance Armstrong, and he just needed more of an opportunity and more snaps. And before he was hurt last year, I mean, he was leading the team in sacks, and a month after he was still hurt, he still led the team in sacks. So there's sometimes it's just about opportunity. It's about giving guys a chance to have a bigger role on a team. And that may be a Leo Chenal specifically. And if Adafe Owe is more of the Chargers Adafe Owe than the struggling at times Adafe Owe with the Ravens, you know, it's a new role, it's a new system, it's a new situation. And sometimes that makes all the difference in the world. And I think we could be in a spot where this is what we end up seeing from this defense. It's not a guarantee, obviously, but you got a lot of younger talent there. I mean, Nick Cross is, what, 25? So sometimes it's new roles, sometimes it's slightly new position. Hell, I just saw something on Instagram. You'll love this, Wes. It was highlights of Terrell Pryor when he switched to wide receiver and had a 1,000-yard season with the Browns. Like, nobody saw that coming.
Oh, yeah.
I knew you'd love that. I forgot about that, actually. Terrell Pryor and I know he was with the Commanders, well, the Redskins at the time, for a while, too, but, like, he was a 1,000-yard receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, they had a couple. Ohio State had a couple quarterbacks that Braxton Miller was another guy who was a quarterback and then transitioned over to halfback.
That's right.
Terrell Pryor as well.
I forgot about Braxton Miller. Can you name all the starting quarterbacks for Ohio State from like the last 10 years?
Okay, so let's see. 2013 was Braxton Miller.
Okay.
2014. Going into the season, Braxton Miller was the Heisman favorite, got hurt. JT Barrett had to step in.
Yep.
He then got hurt against the team up north. Cardale Jones had to step in. He played the last three games that won the national championship. The following year, that had a two-quarterback system, JT Barrett and Cardale Jones. The following year, Cardale Jones played that year. So what year are we in? Dwayne Haskins.
Okay.
And then Dwayne Haskins, and then it was Justin Fields, then Kyle McCord, and then C.J. Stroud, Will Howard, and then Julian Sand.
All right, not bad. Not bad, yeah. Especially because you went through that muddied mid-2010s where it was like three different quarterbacks cycling through.
Yeah. Yeah, it was tough.
Yeah, Terrell Pryor, some guys can switch positions, and it can work. It's not, I know in the end, if you're a quarterback, you want to stay as a quarterback and give it a shot, but sometimes that's your better chance. Like, I always use an example. I mean, some people have careers that pivot, and it ends up being a better situation for them moving forward. I mean, The Rock wanted to be an NFL player, wasn't good, and then got into the family business of pro wrestling and succeeded, and then it became an actor and all this stuff. So it's like sometimes that pivot works, and, again, it's not like Leo Chenal is pivoting positions or anything like that, but sometimes change can be a good thing at times. Look, I'm going into this season, and again, we've got a lot of time, and there's a lot of offseason, and there's a lot of, questions that need to be answered with the Commanders on both sides of the football. I mean, you've got rookie coordinators on both sides of the football. So that, to me, over anything else, I mean, if I were to rank the biggest questions around this team, it's got to be what these coordinators are going to do in their first year as offensive and defensive coordinators, and Durante Jones and David Blau. Like, that's the biggest question to me, even more than who's going to be at center, which I guess is Nick Allegretti, as we've been finding out, but maybe not, and it could be. And like I told Jenks, like, I kind of feel like this team, maybe overestimated the market a little bit, or underestimated would probably be the better word. Whatever. They misjudged things, okay? They clearly didn't have a real plan for Tyler Biadasz's absence, and they thought just releasing him was going to be the right choice. And whether he fit into the offense or not, doesn't matter. Like, now you're sitting kind of scrambling a little bit. And maybe in their mind they're not, and Allegretti's the guy. And we look here, and it's week 5 and week 6, and we go, Allegretti's been pretty good. Okay, maybe that's the case. But the biggest question really is, to me, it starts with the coordinators on the way down, because they're going to dictate so much of the success of this team, right? The system, how players are going to succeed, how Adafe Owe, Leo Chenal, or Sonny Styles, or Nick Cross, or how they're going to adapt to Durante Jones's defense, what the secondary is going to look like, and Durante Jones putting them in a place to succeed. What are the different principles and things that he's collected, Durante Jones, from all of the other defensive coordinators, a Marvin Lewis and a Vance Joseph and a Mike Zimmer and, you know, obviously Brian Flores and all of these different defensive minds, these great defensive minds that he's worked with. Did he collect information and things that worked and bring it all together to kind of build his own system? I mean, that really is. That is the biggest question facing this team, even more than Jaden Daniels and whether he can stay healthy, because we know he can. He did for the most part his rookie year, missed a little time, but it wasn't obviously last season. And some of it was, they were just, at that point, they were so far behind, there was just no point by the, you know, as the season went on. But the biggest questions really are what the offense and defense are going to look like under new coordinators on both sides. And there's no experience for either one of their coordinators. Now you've got Dan Quinn, who at least has, you know, we know that's a great defensive coordinator. We know the success that he had certainly in Dallas and other places. And, you know, so that can help a little with like Durante Jones, maybe they can, you know, but David Blau's kind of on his own. It's a defensive minded head coach. So he's expected to make this offense successful. And again, we know that he was highly coveted as an offensive mind, as an offensive coordinator, as somebody that, you know, like Davis Webb in Denver now. They promoted him basically the same way the Commanders did. They saw what Davis Webb did as a quarterback's coach with Bo Nix in year two and said, we're just going to make this work. They fired their coordinator, promoted him, and you're hoping that that's going to work. Coordinators, offensive coordinators get hired younger and younger and younger now. It's why I say it's like the tech industry, right? They're tech pros. You need them young as hell to be innovative and new and think differently. But defensive coordinators, it kind of feels like you need them a little more of that experience, right? The experience on the defensive side is a lot more about, hey, I've seen this, and I've seen this. And I like, look at the best coordinators and defensive coordinators in the NFL. I mean, they're all older coordinators that have been in the league for a long time. Offensive coordinators tend to get the head coaching jobs and get a couple of opportunities, and then if you're Mike McDaniel, you just realize, I'm not a head coach, and he's going to be an offensive coordinator forever, which, by the way, is not a failure in your career. You can be an all-time great offensive coordinator, an all-time great defensive coordinator. We don't give coordinators enough credit for their value to teams in the NFL until they're gone, and then its absence makes the heart grow fonder all of a sudden, and we're like, hey, man, maybe the Lions really did need their coordinators, right? Maybe they actually were good partially because they had great offensive and defensive coordinators, and we watched the Eagles struggle with offensive coordinators after they have guys taking head coaching jobs for years, and it's like, we put a lot of pressure and a lot of responsibility and a lot of praise when teams win on head coaches, but let's not forget the rest of the staff. Offensive and defensive coordinators are becoming more and more important in the NFL, and we're seeing it once they leave an organization for head coaching jobs, and you realize, oh, Aaron Glenn really mattered in Detroit. Oh, wow, yeah, I mean, we all knew Ben Johnson mattered in Detroit, but saw even more of it this past year. I mean, the Lions didn't make the playoffs. So there is a lot of value to that, where some guys, look, you just might not get to a spot where you can have success as a head coach, but you're a great offensive mind. Mike McDaniel, Josh McDaniels. McDaniels, think I got that right. Did I get that right, Wes? I got both the names right, yes. Mike McDaniel, Josh McDaniels. There you go. One's an S and one's a plural and one's a singular. You know, these are guys that are brilliant offensive minds. They just might not be head coaches, and that's okay. It's clear that Josh McDaniels is not a head coach. We have squeezed all the juice out of that possibility. That's done. He's just going to be a Patriots coordinator forever, and you know what? You found a home, you're going to make a lot of money and have a lot of success there, and you got another great quarterback. Why would you mess with a good thing at this point? You've dabbled in other places, and you realize it's not going to work. Mike McDaniel, I would say at this point, probably the same way. You know, he's a cool guy, but is he really a head coach? He might be a little too laid back to be head coach. Like, you got to kind of have a little bit more, like, it just might not be there. The personality traits can sometimes matter too, and it might not be enough for him. He's going to get another shot. He's going to probably spend a year as the Chargers offensive coordinator and then, you know, get another chance somewhere else because he's an offensive mind that's really, really innovative still, and that's going to matter to a team that has maybe a young quarterback, and he'll get another shot, usually get a couple, but then after that, eventually it just wears down and teams go, okay, the time has passed, and he'll can spend the rest of his career as a great offensive coordinator. We should be praising guys that are great coordinators. Who cares if they're not a great head coach? A lot of these head coaches don't do much anyway. I mean, they do, but you know what I mean? Like, a lot of times when you've got great coordinators, they can lean on them a lot more and be more of the CEO of the team. So I'm going to start this movement. Give coordinators more credit. What do you think, Wes? Should we do it? Are we going to push this? It's a good idea. You're not there.
Yeah.
There you are. You're working behind this. Are you actually doing your job right now?
I am. I was actually podcasting.
Good for you. See, I always know this because usually you want to jump in and be like, Ohio State! And then you didn't. And I went, oh.
Wait, what about Ohio State?
Something. Terrell Pryor. There you go.
Urban Meyer. Ohio State. What about him?
Urban Meyer. Yeah. You already did that earlier. Your ears just perk up when it's anything Buckeyes related.
So. I wish I was at that bar that one day.
Of course you do. Would you have taken the video or would you have saved him?
Oh, no, I'd have saved him.
Yeah, I figured you would. You'd be the guy. No. Come on, Urban. Don't make the mistake, man. I love you.
No, the lady who took the picture would be like, no.
No, please. No pictures.
No pictures. Urban. No paparazzi.
No pictures. I was sitting right next to him at a steakhouse at the Super Bowl in Vegas. And all I wanted to do was just ask him, like, so what were you thinking, dude? Didn't, though, obviously, because that would be weird. But
you'd look and be like, I have more money than you.
Yeah, he would have said that, and I'd be like, yes, this is true. This is very true. You are a head coach that has made millions and millions of dollars, so you will win that battle. So we'll see. Ohio State, go, Wes. No, I'm just kidding.
Kyle McCord. I mentioned Kyle McCord's name.
Stop it.
Dude, he is the worst. He wasted my time.
There's always something. There's always something with you. And I'll give you credit for it. That's for sure. You're Buckeye, right? As Doc calls you, Buckeye. It's just Buckeye. That's Doc, by the way. That is what Doc Walker does. Nick Ashew on The Fan and the Team. So Shakira's doing the World Cup song, huh? Nick Ashew on The Fan and the Team. I feel like this World Cup's going to be a disaster. Am I the only one that feels this way? There's just constantly some sort of controversy.
What do you mean,
right?
By disaster, I guess?
So a disaster for fans, not like the games, but like the way that it's being handled. There's like, you know, they're literally fighting over water bottles right now. Have you seen that?
I have not.
Yeah, so apparently they tried to ban refillable water bottles, and then they're like, what? Oh, no, actually government, you know, local government and politicians are pushing back on this and fans are pushing back. You can bring in refillable water bottles. It's the middle of the summer. It's going to be hot. Let people drink water. You know, the ticket prices are through the roof. They've been pricing people out. It's spread out all over the place. I don't know. This is strictly a gut feeling for me, Wes. It just feels like this World Cup behind the scenes, not the games, not I think there's going to be great games and great events and all that. It's just the stuff and the way the operations are being handled behind the scenes. It feels way too chaotic and like just, you know, like, does that make sense at all? It's strictly a gut feeling.
No, it might make that honestly makes sense. And you look at the other countries, they're a lot smaller. Qatar is a lot smaller than the United States. You know, we're playing games down in Mexico. You could be right. I mean, this could be a disaster. And all the regulations that FIFA has, yeah, I mean, this could bite them in the ass for sure.
It's, you know, again, like, I'm not going anything other than just gut, but it just feels like everything surrounding this World Cup has been so much about some sort of controversy, something being handled wrong, tickets not available, and, you know, what transportation's going to look like. Nobody feels prepared. And again, it's a massive event. I understand it, but it just feels like it's a complete S show. By the way, this Georgia-Mississippi State game is a complete S show right now. It's the top of the ninth. It's 13-12 right now. This game might never end.
It is a mound visit right now for Georgia. They're in the top of the ninth, 2-1, one out. Yeah, 13-12. I was saying coming in this inning, there's no way they have a clean inning. A guy has a single up the middle, and because it's a turf field in Athens, Georgia, the ball bounced over the center fielder's head.
Oh my God.
And he got a double out of it.
And you got runners on first and second right now, one out in the ninth. I mean,
the guy on the mound has over four ERA.
Again, bullpens in college baseball are just basically a mess. They're just not good enough, and this is the type of thing you get. You had 6 runs scored by Mississippi State in the second, 5 in the fourth from Georgia, another 4 in the fifth inning from Georgia. Then the eighth inning had 5 combined runs by both teams. It's 13-12. 16 hits for Georgia, 15 for Mississippi State. Look, I don't care that much about the College World Series. I mean, I do in the sense that I find the games can be interesting, and Game Day Garage will be at the College World Series, by the way, covering that. Make sure you check out that coverage on Instagram and YouTube and everything else. Game Day Garage. It's 13-12, man. Like, this is just – but, like, this is fun, though, because here's the thing. Like, Wes, I don't have any connection to Georgia or Mississippi State. I don't care. But watching chaos unfold in sports where there's no emotional connection is just fun, right? Oh. It's just fun.
It makes you feel invested. You don't have to put money down. We've had this game on what feels like since 9 a.m. And it's like you're not sitting down to watch the whole five-hour game, but when you look up, it's like, oh, my gosh, Mississippi State just tied it again. Georgia just took the lead back and forth. So it's fun to watch, have on your TV while you do some other stuff.
Which you're almost not exaggerating with the 5 hours. This started at 11 a.m., didn't it?
Yes.
So it's 2:44 right now. This game started at 11 a.m. It's likely going to be a four-hour game, maybe longer if it goes to extras.
Part of me wants this guy to have a little blooper in the right field to tie the game.
Tie this thing up?
Why not?
That's kind of what I was thinking, too.
It's been madness. Just continue it.
Take the utter chaos at this point. I don't think anybody's going to complain if you're watching this. Again, if you're a Georgia fan or a Mississippi State fan, it's going to matter more. Or you've bet on either one of these, which I bet in college baseball. What happened now?
Just low on 1-2 pitch.
Okay, there you go.
Now I'm getting invested.
I was going to say, I feel like you're emotionally invested in this game now.
It's your fault.
Well, I mean, look at it. It's 13-12 in the ninth. This is a game.
What's your setup look like? Do you have it right in front of you?
No, not in front of me right now. It's on a TV kind of over my screens here. I was looking at the box score right now. I got too many other things going on. All right? Oh, I got a lot of screens in front of me. I'm actually also not that invested in this enough where I care as much as you still. Like, I like the chaos, but I got a show to do, man. You know, I can't count on you. You're going to start talking about Obsession the movie or podcasting and
Ohio
you're just
going
to get lost. Yeah, or Ohio
Urban
State.
Urban Meyer.
You're just going to out of the blue. You're like, Urban Meyer.
I like college baseball because I was kind of in that environment. Mm-hmm. For a little bit, you know, got to see my buddies go to the College World Series. So I do enjoy it at times. I obviously will watch Major League Baseball I don't watch regular season college baseball. I don't find enjoyment in it. But these type of games where, you know, you're two wins away from going to the College World Series.
Well,
big for
you. You've created a more meaningful environment with these games, right? Like, it's the same thing with a lot of people that don't watch college basketball until March Madness, or don't watch college football until the college football playoff. That's the reason why the NCAA wants to create these big environments that feel impactful and feel, you know, like there's this level of emotion that didn't exist during the regular season. And it's that way with most sports. The only sport that has a regular season that has a high level of pressure every single week is football. College football and the NFL. And I'd argue that even college football's regular season is slightly watered down because you now have more opportunities for teams to get to the playoff versus when it was four teams. So there's that. The rest of the bowl games definitely don't mean a damn thing anymore when they're just exhibitions if it's not actually part of the college football playoff. And you've expanded March Madness for a reason, and college baseball has this too because, like, again, you and I don't have any connections to Mississippi State or Georgia baseball, but this game has meaning to it.
No foul.
And as sports fans, right, you understand what's on the line here. It's going to the College World Series. It's going to Omaha, and it matters. So, yeah, it's like you don't have to watch a lot of the regular season. It's if anything's meaningful, people don't watch hockey sometimes during the regular season and watch Stanley Cup playoffs because there's a lot on the line, and it's fun. That's that's the difference with sports. So, see, you don't care about either one of these teams, and you're sitting here just making noises into the microphone right now.
Hey, 2-2. All right, 2-on, 2-out. There's twos all around. 2-on, 2-out, 2-2.
2-on, 2-out, 2-2. Do you want to do the play-by-play?
Foul ball, straight back.
Okay, there you go. All right, we'll see what happens with this. In 5 minutes, Nick Ashew on the Fan and the Team. I just can't stop watching these videos of Knicks fans just taking over New York, San Antonio. I don't know what to expect after Game 3 on Monday. Nick Ashew on the Fan and the Team. Oh, that Georgia-Mississippi State game went final. 13-12 Georgia wins. So Wes can now breathe. Take a deep breath, buddy. All right, just calm and think about the movie Obsession you watched last night that was clearly not violent and disgusting at all.
No.
You're good. You're good. You doing all right? You thinking about that at all anymore right now?
Oh, yeah. I actually didn't go to sleep last night.
I mean, it sounds like a movie that would keep you awake, if we're being honest.
Yep.
It doesn't sound like that's anything more than that. So, yeah, look, the Spurs have a chance to obviously – look, we overuse the phrase must win a lot. Game 3 is obviously a must win for them. You can't go down 3-0. You're not going to win the series. It's never happened before, and they're certainly not a team that's going to do it. The only time I think that we'll ever have a possibility where a team in the NBA playoffs comes back from a 3-0 deficit is a team that's just down 3-0 because their best players are injured. Like, multiple guys are out, and they all come back for Game 4. I think that's the only way that this really happens. We've seen it time and time again. You just don't have the same level of it's happened in hockey because there's puck luck, right? It feels like there's just more chaos and the games can be closer in that sense. And baseball, we've had it, and it was, you know, Red Sox, Yankees, and it just feels like for it to happen in the NBA, it's got to be a team that's only down because they weren't at full strength, and then they get everybody back and they find a way to do it. Spurs don't look like a team that would be able to come back from 2-0, let alone 3-0 right now. And again, they're young. Victor Wembanyama looks like he's 22 years old, and that's okay. But they're going to be good for a long time, and they're going to be competing with the Thunder. So what's going to happen is you're going to have the Thunder this offseason doing something crazy like trading for Giannis, and then you're going to have the Spurs keeping this roster generally together, maybe trading De'Aaron Fox, and then maybe the Thunder get back to the Western Conference Finals again with the Spurs, and then the Thunder win that series, and then the Spurs are like, well, we got to do something this offseason. So competition's good for the NBA, not a level of, like, the super teams that we had. We don't want that, because you do want rivalries, and you want star players staying with their teams, because that gives you more of a history, and that gives more of an opportunity for, you know, history to carry over to another season and teams to not like each other. Meaningful games in the playoffs are what build real rivalries. That's how it actually happens. And this is a chance now for the NBA to kind of milk a lot of these potentially growing rivalries and new ones. I mean, Thunder Spurs doesn't have a lot of history, but it's getting there. It's not Lakers Celtics, but we're getting to that point. And it's just going to be year after year of those two teams who are built young and built with the chance to have a lot of success over a long period of time. It's going to mean that they're looking at that going, we got 4 or 5 years of our current roster and maybe adding a couple of guys and start looking down the road a little bit. And that's, we're playing the same song twice. Come on.
Yeah, the instrumental.
Wes.
I want to listen to it. We were talking about the World Cup.
I want to listen to it.
Oh, you don't want to?
You have been a pain in the ass today. I just want you to know that. What is this?
You're
absolutely
like
the worst.
Seconds.
We're back on the fan for another 30 minutes after this. We're done on 980. Nick Ashew. Nick Ashew on the team 980. And yes, of course, it is the offseason for the NFL, but it's never really an offseason. And a lot riding on this season coming up and what goes on beforehand for the Commanders as well. We got Logan Paulson jumping on with me now. Of course, former tight end, host of the Take Command podcast, does a lot of work for the Commanders as well. We know this, Logan. Like, there is a lot riding on certainly this season, the expectations, the improvements of the offense, the defense. You got new coordinators on both sides of the football. I mean, if you were to kind of like rank what position, what group, what coach, whatever, like has the most pressure on them right now, is there even somebody that kind of rises to the top? Because it feels like there's a lot of moving parts with really a lot of different parts of this team right now.
Yeah, I mean, I look at who the most important player on this roster is, and it's got to be Jaden Daniels. And obviously, look at the offensive coordinator, and it's David Blau. And so I'd say, like, he has the most, I'm going to say, responsibility, because, again, when you have a franchise quarterback, a lot of pressure is put on the offensive coordinator. And I think, you know, having some brief conversations with David Blau and looking at his history, I think he's more than ready for that challenge. But I do think when you look at the people that have the most pressure, the most responsibility, like, to me, it's the person that's going to foster the growth of the young quarterback. And so really it's David Blau, but really the entire staff that has that responsibility. And so, you know, obviously when you're looking at what they did in Detroit, what they're doing, what David Blau was exposed to in Minnesota, Detroit, and, you know, what he's kind of doing at OTAs, you kind of look at it through that lens, or at least I do, kind of saying, what does this do for Jaden Daniels, and how can they lay a foundation for him to be the best version of himself?
Now, obviously, he's going to be under center more. We know that that wasn't really the way the offense has been, certainly for him in his time in the NFL. How much of an advantage, how much of that do you look at and say this is going to make him better? How much of an adjustment is it going to be? Because it's definitely going to be different for him.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be different for him. But I look at, I mean, you just look around the league at the moment, and the teams that are kind of the best are the teams that I think run a little bit more under center. And one of the reasons they do that is I think it just makes it harder for defenses to get tells and get keys because you're kind of in a more balanced formation. The back's right behind you. The ball fake on play action, on keepers, on pocket movement is a little bit more comprehensive, is a little bit longer. You can hide the football a little bit better. So I do think like one of the things that does is it allows you kind of some easy buttons. It allows you to kind of hit those big play action shots down the field. It creates windows at the second level of the defense because those linebackers have to take another half step or they have to hold for another half second before they can get to their spot drops. So I think some of that stuff for him is going to be huge because, again, in Cliff's offense, I think there are a lot of principles there that I liked and I think are good and I think the NFL should adopt more of. But I think one of the limitations is that like it put a lot of pressure and a lot of onus on the quarterback to be special down in and down out. When you're under center or in this version of NFL offense where you can use play action pass more, it gives you just something that's slightly easier than just kind of sitting back there, you know, three steps in the gun and reading the defense out. So I do think that's kind of what you're looking at here is just kind of more opportunities to create simpler pictures for the quarterback. And again, under center is a feature of that. But to me, it's how the formations marry, how they look like run pass, and how they don't give these tells to the defense.
What do you think this run game is going to look like? Obviously, you've got a crowded running back room now. There were a lot of expectations on Bill last season. Again, not everybody's necessarily going to make the roster here, but they certainly got a lot of guys they want to at least try to see how they fit in this offense.
Yeah, the run game is going to be interesting. Schematically, I think it'll be interesting. Obviously, they haven't shown a ton of that at OTAs because they're in half shells and you don't really get to see it. But when you look at Detroit, for example, they were like a pretty heavy outside zone team. And like when you kind of look at the league, they're kind of moving back to more gap scheme run stuff, you know, powers, counters, GTs, you know, kind of what I would call bounces where you're pulling the guard and tackle to get to the perimeter, stuff that creates hard alleys and clean run lanes for the running back. And I thought it was interesting that Detroit kind of leaned into this outside zone game a little bit more. And obviously Ben Johnson, when he goes to Chicago, kind of brings that with him. Kevin O'Connell comes from kind of the Sean McVay tree. They run a little bit more outside zone than normal. So I do think outside zone, just based on where David Blau's been from, will be kind of more outside zone based. But if you look at any good run scheme now, it's not, you can't just be like an outside zone team or a gas scheme team. You've got to kind of sprinkle in everything. Defenses are too good. They're too smart. So you got to kind of give them different looks and different runs to defend. And I think you'll see that. But I think if you're going to kind of say percentage wise, you know, maybe they're, you know, 15% outside zone, they're 12% gap scheme, they're, you know, 5% RPO, whatever that looks like, I think that's kind of how the percentages will shake out.
Logan, at what point are we going to see like a 25-year-old offensive coordinator? Like, it's just crazy how these guys are getting younger and younger and younger now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously, like, I think that's a concern because experience drives so much of offensive success and coaching success. But one of the things when you're with young coaches, like, I was really blessed to be on that staff in 2012 with, you know, Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Matt LaFleur, Mike McDaniel, all those guys who are really young, smart people. And one of the things they bring or the youth brings is they're bringing innovation and they're bringing energy. And so, like, you know, obviously, like, when you're around the team now and David Blau's a young guy, David Rye's a young guy, there is an energy, there's an enthusiasm, which is important for players. And I think that coaching style is really effective. And I think like getting guys to engage with the concepts with that energy is super important. So I think, like, you know, to your point, I think if you get the right kind of guy who's 25 years old and has the right kind of energy, right kind of mindset, right kind of disposition, you know, there is a possibility, because that's the thing is right now football in a lot of ways is a young man's game, because you're looking for like that next wrinkle, that next innovation. And I think that also applies to coaches.
Yeah, I mean, it's now you're looking at coordinators that are rookie coordinators on both sides of the football here. And, you know, listen, I think we can probably agree that's definitely a risk in some ways, but they obviously see something in both of them that, you know, I would be the reason why they hired him. When you look at, obviously, there's going to be changes defensively, just like there are offensively, a little bit different. It's, you know, they had different seasons last year. We know the personnel is a little bit different there. But when you just kind of look at a roster from a whole, and again, we haven't seen anything yet, so we're clearly playing the speculation game. But you know, how much of a risk would you put it, just to put it in perspective here, is it for this team to have coordinators that don't have that experience on both sides of the football?
That's a really good question. You know, and I think when you look at the history of it, you know, first-year coordinators can be big swings, like knock-out-of-the-park type stuff, or they can be, you know, you're striking out. So I think it really depends on your confidence in the individual, and I think it's going to depend on David Blau and Durante Jones. And I think they're very different. You know, Durante Jones has this dearth of experience. He's been all over the place. He's lived in his car. He's coached in college and high school and the NFL, and he's developed all these different teaching philosophies. And David Blau's a little bit different. You know, he's kind of the whiz kid coming in. And so I think the thing that gives me confidence is when you talk to them and when you hear them speak at the press conference, the thing that they understand what coaching is, and coaching is ultimately teaching. And like when you hear David Blau talk about the benefits of under center, the benefits of the tight formations, like all that stuff is right on. And it's right in the vein of what good offenses are doing in the NFL. And when you look at Brian Flores and what he did and what Durante Jones was exposed to in Minnesota, like to me, that's one of the best defensive systems that nobody's talking about in the NFL. And so like, if you want to bring that philosophy here, like let's do it. And I think the thing that gets me excited about Durante is the teaching background. Like when you hear him talk about breaking things down and making make sense and making it apply to the players, like that's what coaching is. So it's a great question. Like, you know, two first-year coordinators, the success rate's probably all over the place, but I do – the guys that are in the seats now have answered the questions that they can answer in a positive way, which is exciting for me.
Yeah. Talking to Logan Paulson here, you know, and you mentioned obviously the offensive coaching staff that you got to be a part of with, well, then there were Redskins obviously at that point, and that Kyle Shanahan, really Mike Shanahan coaching tree as that's gone down. I mean, you look at just the experience that somebody like a Durante Jones has built up. It's not just Brian Flores. I mean, he's worked with Vance Joseph and Marvin Lewis and Mike Zimmer, a lot of these different ones. So I think that's what just kind of gives me a lot of a feeling of hope for this defense to improve, is just that it's Brian Flores and that defense that a lot of people love, that was certainly aggressive. And, you know, we know all the things they were able to do, but I mean, Durante Jones has spent time with so many other coaches too, where obviously the hope is he can take a little bit of parts and a little bit, Logan, from like every single one of those coordinators, knowing what worked and kind of build his own system that people haven't seen, but also some aspects that maybe have worked and been successful.
Yeah, and I think the really cool thing for me when I look at that tree is it's a bunch of guys that were really innovative from a pressure standpoint. Obviously, Brian Flores is one of the most aggressive blitzing coaches in the NFL, right? And the stuff he's doing is really innovative in terms of how aggressive he is with pressure. But then you look at, you know, Zimmer and what he did in Minnesota. I remember, you know, playing against him and being in Chicago and looking at the film and looking at the third down pressure packages, and he was doing things that no one else was doing and putting you in pressure, putting the offense under pressure in ways that no one else was doing. So I look at those two coaches and I say to myself, like, man, he's seen what the cutting edge of blitzing looks like. And I can't wait for him to bring that philosophy here. Because ultimately, like when you look at defense and what makes it good, it's how you affect the quarterback. And he's seen two defenses that have done it better than anybody. And so I think that's the thing that gets me really excited for him. So hopefully, yeah, like you're saying, he can draw a little bit from Flores, from Joseph, from you know, Zimmer, and kind of get everything they need in here to elevate the personnel that they've done a great job of assembling.
What do you think Durante Jones will bring just specifically to that secondary? Because we know there's certainly some young talent there, especially at corner, but we've seen the inconsistencies there.
Yeah, I think the thing that I look at with that group is when you look at Minnesota, like they don't ask those corners to do a whole lot. And so obviously, like Fred Smoot is a guy that I work with really closely, and he played here under a defense that brought a ton of pressure. And I think the thing, like when you talk to corners that play in these kind of zero all out, hyper effective, hyper aggressive defenses, it really limits the way the offense can attack you, right? So I look at the young players, obviously Mikey, Trey Amos, and I say to myself, like, what are they good at? They've got really good ball skills, and they are really good at playing with vision to the quarterback. When you look at the Minnesota team and how they ran their defense there, the thing that sticks out to me kind of first and foremost is the corners have their feet in concrete. They're standing at 8 yards. They're reading the receiver through to the quarterback because they trust with 100% certainty that whatever pressure they are bringing is going to get home. And so, like, I think you're just with young cornerback groups, like the best thing you can do for them is limit their exposure, limit what they have to defend, limit what they have to think about. And I think this defense does a really good job of that.
You think we'll see Sanders still more on the outside now?
I mean, I think, you know, with good football players, you're going to put him in multiple spots. You know, I think obviously he has a skill set like we've seen, or the fan base has seen here over the last couple of weeks of last season, where he's very efficient on the perimeter, right? And I think in this defense, he can play on the perimeter. They're not going to ask him to kind of be this shutdown perimeter guy. It's like, play with vision. Let's get our hands on footballs and turn the football over. I think he's really good at that. But I also think, like, when you watch him in the slot, there are some limitations there with how he fits the run, but he's still a heck of a football player. Like, you know, he's just got this kind of rugged mentality to him when he plays on the interior. So I just want him on the field as much as I can. And again, I know last season didn't live up to expectations, but the entire defense didn't live up to expectations. And I'm hoping that with Durante Jones coming in here as a teacher, he'll be able to maximize again Mikey Sanders' skill set.
Talking to Logan Paulson, Chick Okonkwo is one of the guys that I'm really excited about to see in this offense. Obviously, you know the position well. What do you expect from him in this offense and really what they can do with him and his skill set?
Yeah, I think that's the thing that's going to be the most exciting thing with Chig is what can they do, right? Because when you look at the stuff in Tennessee, it's very vanilla is the word I'm going to use. It's like, hey, he's going to run up the seam. We're going to throw a screen to him. He's going to catch a check down and run for a first down. Just looking at the movement skills and the movement dexterity, and he's shown a little bit of this at OTAs, like just a more diverse profile. But like, I want to see more. I want to see what you can do with him because, you know, he's a 4-5 guy. He's very competitive. He's tough with the football in his hands. I think he has maybe not like receiver route running chops, but definitely above average route running chops for a tight end. And when you look at the league and how everyone's moving to 12 and 13 personnels and what that does to defense in terms of fixing and kind of dictating personnel, I think you can put him in a really good spot to be a weapon here. And he's got to show it. He's got to earn it. But he does feel like, looking at the stuff from Tennessee, he's on kind of this ascension trajectory, which gets me excited for his role in this offense.
You think they're going to add another receiver?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, they've obviously tried at numerous occasions, like in free agency, obviously, with the kid from Indianapolis and Dobbs and all these different pieces. So I think it's on their mind as an area that they need to improve on. I just think, you know, obviously, when you look at Diggs, for example, I think everyone's like, oh, yeah, we should sign Diggs. But I think a lot of teams are thinking that same thing. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to be a little bit more expensive than people want to admit. So it'll be interesting to see how they progress with that. Obviously, there's another name that floats around there quite a bit, Brandon Ayuk. We'll see what goes on with that. But I definitely think it's on their mind. It just, I think, is it the right fit? Is it the right person and personality for this team?
I was trying not to mention his name, but you did it, so it's your fault.
It's
Logan,
okay, right? Yeah, fault. Sorry. Yeah, it's just every possible junction, his name comes up anyway.
I mean, let's be honest, until there's a solution to that, that's always going to be the question that's there. And I mean, I get it. Like, I mean, it is what it is. And this team could certainly, you know, they're going to be looped into that. Before you go, it's NFC and it's not Commanders. So I look at the NFC. I think the NFC feels pretty wide open. It's like Rams and everybody else to me. And I know we could poke holes with a lot of different teams. Obviously, the Rams went all in with the Myles Garrett trade and that. You know, when you look at the NFC as a whole now, I mean, the Eagles are certainly going to have questions, at least a quarterback, until that's answered with Jalen Hurts, if it's ever answered. And the 49ers have gotten a little older and there's injuries. I mean, good on the list of all that. But I don't know. To me, Logan, I look at the NFC and see, look, not a spot where the Commanders may be like a 2 seed, but I do feel like that if this team can stay relatively healthy like they did a couple of years ago, there is a path for this team not only to get to the playoffs, but maybe even win a playoff game. The NFC doesn't feel as deep as the AFC does right now. And even long-term, if you look at it, the AFC, a lot of young quarterbacks paired with a lot of good defenses. The NFC is a little bit different in that sense to me.
Yeah, I think you did a good job there of like alluding to kind of the fluctuation in talent in the division or in the conference over the last even the last couple of weeks, you know, in terms of A.J. Brown leaving, all those types of things. So I agree. I think that's the fun thing about the NFL is you do like the schedule release, which I'm sure you were a part of, and you're like, oh my gosh, look at this, and everybody's here, yes. Right? But like people get nicked up, coaching changes don't work out the way you think. So I'm with you, man. I do think there's a space here, but again, you know, coaches got to coach, players got to play, and we got to stay healthy and put our best foot forward here.
Yeah, I looked at the beginning of that schedule. I was live on the air going, oh my God, I knew some of these games, but it feels like a lot front-ended. But then, again, that's the thing with the schedule. I've done so many schedule release shows over the years, and it's like, we don't know. We don't know this time of year, Logan. You don't know. Right. You mentioned the injuries, and we're like, well, they got Atlanta later. What if Atlanta's good? I don't know. Like, so, yeah, it's like we play these games, and it's fun to look at win totals, and yeah, I'll take the over on their win totals. Logan, in the end, we know nothing. So I'm glad you said that because it really is just a dumb game that we play, but we fall into the trap, it feels like, every year.
Well, so we got to have something to talk about, right? You know, like you said, the NFL does a good job staying relevant year-round, and the schedule release has become one of those events we just have to talk about. So,
and listen, the NFL is a drug we all need injected into our veins. Logan Paulson, Take Command Podcast. Good to talk to you, buddy. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you.
Nick Ashew on the Fan. There you go, Wes. All right, now this
had
is
to
a lot
give you
better
at least
than
one song.
I mean, I need a banger, not Enrique Iglesias like you did in the first hour. I know you're trolling me when you do it. Yeah, I don't need any more of that.
But I want to listen to the song. I knew you like it.
There you go. I'll take that. This is better. Well done, my friend. It only took you 3 hours for you to get your S together, but you did, and that's what matters. You're starting off like the Spurs over the first two games of the finals, and your youth was showing.
Hey, job ain't finished. I'll be happy.
That's true. Just finish. You're right. It's only 2-0 right now. Have you seen that Kobe quote that's going around? Is that what you're talking about?
Oh, I mean, I just know that. It's so iconic.
Yeah. Well, it's been making its rounds again today, just like it's 2-0, and it's like Kobe, like, job ain't finished. Is it done? And it's so true, man. I miss Kobe. I'd like that. Just in today's world of everything and these motivational speakers and everything on social media, just to have Kobe and, like, new stuff from Kobe and man, he'd be – it's – it's so iconic. It's funny you bring that up because, I mean, I've seen it so many times today, but it's so true. And look, like, the Spurs aren't out of this series, but you obviously can't go down 3-0. You're done. Like, they're not coming back from that. But if they've had this type of trouble through the first two games at home with a lot of Knicks fans certainly there, what do you think it's going to be like in Madison Square Garden? I mean, it's not, again,
out of control. I have been there, which it's a iconic.
What, to the Garden?
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. It's an amazing cool. place. It's an amazing venue. I've gone to see Knicks games there over the years, and it's just, you know, before, after renovations, like all of that. And it's just, it's awesome. And it's, you know, it's what makes this so great for the NBA is having the Knicks succeed, because it actually means something now, as opposed to like, hey, it's great to play in the Garden, but, you know, it's a team that's 20 games under 500 like we saw for so long. Again, it should give any fan base hope. I was talking about it this morning on my Westwood One show. I was like, listen, if you're a fan of, like, the Browns, the Knicks should give you at least hope that you can have a dysfunctional, meddling, annoying owner, and if you have the right front office, you can still overcome that. Because James Dolan's still the owner of the Knicks. He's just not involved anymore. And Leon Rose, the team president, basically said, I'm running this show, and I'm going to do it my way, and he's made it work. And you know, there's different ways to build a team. The Knicks built their team through trading picks and, you know, free agent signings. It's mostly trades. I mean, really, a lot of it is trades, and the bench is, you know, free agents. Some trade. They did it completely different the way the Spurs are. And look, the Spurs are young. Wemby looks 22 in this series, but nobody's going to hold this against him. They're really not. Like, we're going to get to a point where we look back on this and go, remember when Wemby looked lost in the NBA Finals? I mean, LeBron got swept when he was 22 when the Cavs played the Spurs. And the Spurs at the time were veterans. Now, that Spurs team obviously had won titles. The Knicks haven't won any titles, but they do have a lot of playoff experience. They have a lot of NBA experience in general. And it's just showing. It's showing in this series that the Knicks are comfortable. One, they're coming back from a 14-point deficit in game one. Two, even though they blew a huge lead to the Spurs, they still win the game. And some of it was also Wemby turning the ball over when the game was tied with 10 seconds left. And you know, you're seeing that youth there. The Spurs have a young head coach. They're just young. And that's okay. Like, they're already ahead of schedule. They have jumped the line. Most teams that make the jump from, you know, 30 to 40-something wins to 50s to 60s, the Spurs went from, what, 34 to 62 wins. They don't get this far. They usually lose in the second round. And we saw it with the Thunder. We've seen it with, you know, the Nuggets before they won their title. And you go down the list and find other teams that have similar situations. You've got to go through the losses. You've got to go through the gaining the experience. You've got to go through the situations where you just don't know what you're doing. And it's finally shown up for the Spurs. And I was waiting for this, right? I mean, you saw it in the second round, game one, against the Timberwolves. They come back game two. Spurs win by 38. Wemby looks better. I think he had, what, 15 points in game one against Minnesota in the second round. I thought they'd lose to the Thunder. I thought they were 1 year away. And now they're looking like the team that's a year away from potentially winning a title. Because now they've gained all this experience. And then, this could still be a series. They could win a couple of games. They don't look like a team that could win two games in this series. But I'm not going to sit here and say the Knicks are going to sweep this without question. Is it a possibility that they win the next two games and sweep? Absolutely. But the point is that if you're the Spurs, they've got to get back to the mindset, if they want to make this a series, of we're not supposed to be here. They're playing way too tight. They look way too uncomfortable. Wemby looks lost, and he's even talked about it. Like, he's just saying he's, what, blurry? Like, yeah, the game is moving fast, and the Knicks are overwhelming him. And the Knicks have done a really good job of making his life miserable in a lot of ways. And it's not like Wemby's had Like, he hasn't had great Wemby games. He still put up 26 in game one, 29 in game two. He just hasn't shot the ball well. He's turned the ball over. He's made mistakes, and certainly costly mistakes in big moments. And listen, even last night, if Wemby hits that game-winning shot at the buzzer last night, it's a totally different narrative. Like, that's really something to think about, too, here, is that we're talking so much about throwing it in the back of Stephon Castle, turning the ball over, and Jalen Brunson hits a free throw, and the Knicks win by one. Well, if Wemby comes back and hits that game winner and the series is tied 1-1, that's a completely different narrative, completely different scenario. Everything is different in this series. We're talking about Wemby overcoming a late turnover, hitting the game-winning shot, the series tied 1-1 going back to the Garden. That's how close this series has actually been. One shot completely could have changed the entire trajectory of where things are. But the Knicks just look like a team that's much more comfortable in these situations. And look, they've won 13 straight playoff games. That is an unbelievable accomplishment. It's the second longest winning streak in NBA playoff history. Jordan's Bulls in 93 did that, Jordan's Bulls in 93 and the Rockets in 95 with Hakeem Olajuwon won the first two road games in the NBA Finals. So the Knicks have also accomplished that. But to win 13 straight games in general is hard enough. But to be able to do that in the playoffs against what's supposed to be the best of the best in the league, I mean, it's an unbelievable accomplishment. Charles Barkley actually talked about that after the game last night and what they've done.
I'm going to say this. My man David Dennis from ESPN, we were talking. I'm not saying this is the greatest team ever. I'm going to make that clear. If they win these next two games, this is one of the greatest runs in playoff history.
I can live with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the greatest runs. I mean, you got to give them their props. I mean, it's amazing what they've
done.
You
got to give them their props, and maybe you need to give the Hawks some more props because they're the only team that took them to seven so far.
It is kind of true, right? The Hawks were the last team to beat the Knicks. The Knicks have also won closeout games by monster numbers. I mean, you know, they're up by 61 at one point against the Hawks. I mean, really, that changed everything. They were down 2-1, and they just beat the hell out of the Hawks, blew them out, up by 61 in a closeout game, and then they haven't looked back since. It's just, they're a team it's all clicked at the right time. And for a while, there was a question of whether Mike Brown was the guy. And like, are they going to look for another coach this offseason? Is Billy Donovan going to be the Knicks head coach? And now it's all changed. So they got what they wanted, and they got that next step that Tom Thibodeau wasn't able to get them there. And it's the same team as last year, and they're in the NBA Finals, and they look different. They figured it out offensively. They've still been strong defensively, and they've made life hell for Victor Wembanyama. He's a 22-year-old that's finally dealing with some real adversity, and he's going to come back. No matter what happens the rest of the series, he's going to come back next year better. He's going to train with monks and dribble the ball up a path in the mountains like he did already for 4.5 hours. He's going to do it for 5 hours this time. It's just going to continue to get better. He's great for the league, and he's going to be the face of the league moving forward. And either way, this series is great for the NBA, but I'm sure they're hoping this goes 7 games and that the Spurs turn this thing around. A sweep with the way the playoffs have gone and the way this series has gone, the NBA would not want that to happen. All right, we'll wrap it up next. Nick Ashew on The Fan.
Barrett to the far side. Ball caught. Paris Campbell. Watch out. He's a burner. Campbell down the sideline. Campbell. Touchdown. Ohio State. 57 yards.
You are. I know this is the last segment, and this is just the nail in the coffin of your trolling today, Wes. You were out of control today.
Hey, it was an honor of Paris Campbell calling it a career.
There has been way too much of you just interjecting Ohio State where it doesn't belong in this show today. Just crowbarring that thing in there. So why don't you do the last segment? I'm done. Just go ahead. Tell me about Ohio State. What is it? Why don't you tell me how you feel about it and the reason why you played that random audio there, buddy.
Well, like I said, Paris Campbell, who played with Justin Fields, he called it a career. He actually played in Dwayne Haskins. He had a great career. He actually played with Terry McLaurin. We can transition into the Commanders. Terry McLaurin going to have a great year with the Commanders after getting his contract done. But his old teammate called it a quits after a nice college and NFL career. Actually, Paris Campbell was wide receiver 1 when Terry McLaurin was there. Terry McLaurin at wide receiver 3. That's why he went into the third round.
All right, that was a decent job. I'll give you some credit for tying the Commanders in and Terry McLaurin. That's the biggest challenge there, is you had to find a way to take something that made nothing to do with anything and turn it into something. So I'll give you...
He wore number 83.
Now you've just gone too far. I was going to give you a 6.5 out of 10 for that. Now I might drop you down to a 6.
I'm just saying, yeah. It's crazy. Terry McLaurin, star in the league, wearing number 83 in college.
Terry McLaurin, I mean, look, the 10 targets a game is going to be...
Wouldn't that be nice?
Look, just the one thing you don't want is you can't force feed. And I don't think the offense is going to get to that point. You're going to certainly try not to. And if you at least have teams thinking that Terry's going to get 10 targets a game, it's going to certainly open up guys like Antonio Williams and whoever else is there at receiver. And look, I don't think that they're done at receiver, but it's certainly up in the air as to what else they do. Stephon Diggs, Brandon Ayuk, even with the Ayuk arrest warrant for the speeding. This is not going to be enough to hold them back from this. And if it's a low risk deal that doesn't cost them very much, they're gonna consider it. But you know, they may be happy with what they've got at receiver. If Antonio Williams establishes himself as somebody that it's not about like a number one versus a number two versus a number three receiver. It's role and formation and targets, and those are the types of things that are going to matter. And this may be an offense that works with what they've got for now. If Antonio Williams is Amon-Ra St. Brown light in the offense his rookie year, you're getting a lot more production that's already there. And look, I don't think he's going to be a star, but I think Luke McCaffrey showed us before he got hurt last year that he has the potential to be somebody that has a bigger role in this offense, not just as a returner, which he was one of the best in the NFL last year, but to show that he can be a consistent receiver as well. We started to see that growth last season. And if he comes back and he's healthy and he's improved a little bit more in terms of route running and fundamentals and you know, all the little things and being able to get some separation, I think there's a possibility there that Luke McCaffrey has a bigger role this year. And who knows? I mean, they signed Van Jefferson. Is Van Jefferson going to be a guy that actually stretches the field and stays healthy? There is a chance that this wide receiver room that they have is pretty much what it ends up being. There's obviously a chance of that. I'm just saying, if you've got a low-risk situation, if you could bring Stephon Diggs in for a season... Who cares if it costs you $20 million? They got $44 million in cap space. That's plenty of wiggle room. You can overpay for 1 year, and you're not committed past this year if that's the case. But again, he's got to want to take that. It's got to be it's easy for us to be like, Stephon Diggs only take a one-year deal. But as you know, you pointed out, Wes, like he took it was 1- and 2-year deals recently, so I think there's a chance that that could be the case. But
yeah, I think he took the one-year deal in New England. He had 1 year in Houston, but because he came off the injury, mm-hmm. that's probably why it was 1 year. But you could probably see, you'll probably see another 1 year deal here. Maybe two.
Again, if 1 year for $20 million, I mean, if it's 1 year, I think that's, I'd be fine with them doing that. Again,
1 year, $20 million, you said?
This year. 1 year, $20 million.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's not crazy.
Book it.
Yeah, book it. There you go. And then Brandon Ayuk is mostly an incentive laden contract, and you let everybody fight it out in camp and see who makes the roster. I'm down for that. I mean, I think that's not a bad way to set this whole thing up, but they may also just stick with what they've got. And who knows who else could get released to in camp or who's available. I mean, we're looking at a small group right now, but we know how this goes. Guys get cut in camp all the time because it's a numbers game and a team wants to get younger or they want to save money or whatever the case is. And there's guys available right before the start of the season that you end up adding to the roster and kind of came out of nowhere. So I think there's still a lot left for this team. And there's still a lot of opportunities there for them to maybe add a couple of pieces if they want in camp. But in the end, it all comes down to Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin. I mean, both to be healthy. That's really what matters. Good job, Wes. You derailed the show half the time, but, you know, still some good stuff overall. Nick Ashew on the Fan.